Alright. So today's mitzvah. Okay. Today's mitzvah.
Attention to order.
Attention. Call to order. There you go.
Attention to order.
Today we're going to talk about two mitzvos. Number. We're actually going back a few because we skipped these past few weeks. This is 594 and 595 in our count. And this 594, 595. And these the mitzvah that we're going to focus on is the mitzvah of giving lashes to someone who does an avera, someone who sins. And it's a foreign concept to us in modern times. You know, the whole idea of corporal punishment itself, you know, for a court system to punish physically, besides the death penalty, we're not used to that type of thing anymore in modern days. But the Torah gives it as one of the primary punishments for a sinner. Just to we'll read the passage in the Torah, and then we'll move on from there. So it says, this is chapter 25 in Devarim, in Parshat Kisetse. It says, I'll just read the English to make it easier, when there will be a grievance between people, and they approach the court, and they judge them, and they vindicate the righteous one and find the wicked one guilty. It will be that if the wicked one is liable to lashes, not everyone's liable to lashes, but if he's liable to lashes, the judge shall cast him down and strike him before him, according to his wickedness by account. 40 shall he strike him, he shall not add, lest he strike him an additional blow beyond these, and your brother will be degraded in your eyes. So we have three verses in the Torah speaking about lashes. So we want to understand what is this punishment, when does it apply, how do they do it, and then we'll understand the message that we can learn from this punishment as well. So let's just take it slowly. And first and foremost, we spoke about a few weeks ago, I forgot which date it was, we spoke about the prohibition of muzzling an ox while it's working. And we had said when we spoke about that is the verse following lashes in the Torah, which indicates to us that any sin which one does, which is comparable to muzzling your ox as it works, those sins are liable to lashes. And the way this is described by the Gemara is very simply, any typical everyday prohibition of the Torah is liable to lashes. Ranging from eating pig, wearing shatnez, working on yontif, the list goes on and on. But just any regular everyday prohibition that gets lashes. There's some exceptions to that, but that's the general rule. For one to be liable to lashes, there has to be edim, witnesses, and hasra, and warning for the action. So take our example. Someone's about to eat a pork chop. So you need to have two witnesses who actually witness the person eating the pork chop. And the person has to be warned. They have to be told beforehand, if you eat this, you will get lashes. And the person says, okay, I don't care. So that's how he gets lashes. But if you're lacking in a warning or lacking in witnesses, then the court cannot administer lashes. The court, the beis din that is authorized to give lashes, has to be a beis din with official smicha. I've mentioned before, smicha nowadays is just sort of symbolic. Real smicha came, from Moshe Rabbeinu, passed down generation to generation, and that line of transmission was lost at a certain point. We don't have that anymore. When we say a rabbi has smicha nowadays, it means symbolically he's been ordained to take on that role.
But in Israel, it's not so in Israel, isn't that?
Oh no! There's no.
Either way, we have both places. The same thing, even in Israel. Either way, yeah. That chain.
It's centuries, right? It's gone.
Yeah, it's been gone since.
In other countries, but I thought in Israel it was.
It's gone. It's gone. Yeah. So the smicha is gone everywhere, right? So we don't have any beis din that's authorized to give lashes nowadays because nobody has this smicha. There's nobody who's considered has that authority. There is something called makas mardus, which is a rabbinic lashes, which the rabbis can decide to give when necessary. There's no official rules for that one, but that's just something in the arsenal of the rabbis to give when they feel people need it. So that's a separate issue. But in terms of the Torah malchus, the actual lashes the Torah prescribes, you can only give that punishment if you have an actual official beis din with true smicha. So how exactly are lashes given? How do we do lashes? So I want to read to you the Rambam, who goes through it in depth. And from there, we'll see how this works. So I'm just going to start. I'm reading from the Rambam, Hilchos Sanhedrin, the Laws of Sanhedrin. This is chapter 16, is where I'm starting. So he says, and really the Rambam is taking it from sources, from the Gemara, from the Mishnah, from earlier sources, but he just kind of compiles it together in an organized way. So the Rambam says, now how does one give lashes? So what you do is you take the person who's being punished, you take his hands, and you tie them around a pillar. This person's like this. And then you have somebody who's supposed to grab his clothing, So if the person allows you to take off the clothing, then fine. If it tears, it's also fine. The point is you have to give lashes directly on the skin, not on the clothing. So the person cooperates, then you just pull off his shirt. If he doesn't cooperate, you tear off his shirt. But lashes must go on the skin, not on the clothing. The whip itself, so before that, so behind the person who is being lashed is a stone, some sort of like stand, the stool they stand on. And the messenger of the Beis Din, who's the one who's giving the lashes, stands on that stone. The whip itself is made out of it's made out of leather from a calf, which is folded over four times. So I guess you take a long piece of leather and you double it over and double it over again. And then attached to that on the sides are two additional straps made out of donkey hide. And we'll discuss why that is maybe a little bit later. Made out of donkey hide. Donkey hide is treif. Does you're not eating the whip, so that's okay.
maybe that has a reason. Maybe that's part of the reason.
I'm sorry, the first leather was
from a calf. And then you take the rest from a donkey. So the whip is kind of like, there's like three straps on this whip. The biggest middle one is out of a calf hide, and then the two side ones are donkey hide. It says that the width of the whip should be a tefach, which is approximately 4 inches, and the length should be adjusted based on the one being lashed, because it's supposed to reach to a certain point in his body, which we'll see. Say the width, yeah, a tefach is about 4 inches. So there also has to be a little bit of extra space for the person to hold onto as a handle. So that's the whip. The length should be adjustable based on the person being lashed, because you want it to be able to reach. We'll see where, but it has to hit him in the right part of the body.
Okay. So you're going to give lashes?
she's getting ready.
Wow.
The Muslim gives all the time.
Yeah, the Muslim countries still do. They still do in Muslim countries, right? So these things. Then this is interesting. So the Rambam says, according to the Gemara, that the person giving the lashes is supposed to be yeser bideya, very intelligent, v'chaser b'koach, but lacking strength. I mean, you don't put up the guy who's like the football player who's going to give him the hardest lash possible.
Right.
You put up the guy who's not that strong. So the lashes are given, and there is pain, but we're not trying to, it's not torture. We're not trying to kill, we're not trying to be torturous, we're trying just to show a point, which we'll talk about.
You're saying that anybody who played in this past Super Bowl could do it.
Oh. I didn't see the game, but
it was pretty poor.
Okay. So, but yeser b'deah v'chaser b'koach. So highly intelligent, so they understand they're doing it correctly, but not so strong. They lift up the whip with two hands, and then they go down with one hand as hard as they can. The way that they do the lashes is that they do one on the chest, and then two like on the back of the shoulders. So it'll be like wham, you know, over into the chest, and then on the shoulders. So it comes in sets of three. That's how you do the lashes. The person being lashed isn't standing up straight. Isn't sitting, the person is bending over. They're tied to this post and they're bending over. And that's based on a pasuk. The pasuk says it should be that way. The greatest judge, the highest authority, the judge of the highest authority who is on this Beis Din, he stands there overseeing the procedure, make sure it's done right. And as they whip the criminal, we'll call him, as they whip the person who's being punished, he's not a victim, he deserves this. The one being punished. So the head of this Beis Din, he reads different psukim to give a message. And the point is, we'll talk about more, lashes are not meant just to inflict pain, they're meant to make the person think about their actions. So if you do it in the wrong context, then the person has no thoughts of tshuva, of improvement. But if they do it in the right context, if as it's being done, you're hearing verses of the Torah, which is supposed to help you to see the problems that you have and inspire you, then at least the lashes will bring you to a new understanding of yourself, which is the goal. If the person being lashed dies from the lashes, so the agent of the Beis Din is pater. I mean, he's not considered a murderer by doing that. I mean, it was an accident. But if he went over the prescribed amount, then that's considered, you know, that's considered manslaughter. And the agent of the Beis Din is sent into exile. That's the case of Golos. You go to the Eir Mikla, the city of refuge, as we do to people who commit manslaughter accidentally. So when the Beis Din gives lashes, so before they start, they bring in a doctor. And the doctor is supposed to assess, can this person handle so many lashes? Mm-hmm. And if the doctor says this person is weak, then they will then cut out a certain amount of lashes that the person can handle. So the doctor might say, this person can handle the entire amount, so you give the entire amount. The doctor might say, this person is very weak, can only handle 9 lashes, they'll give 9 lashes. But they let the doctor come in, because the point is not to kill, the point is to punish, but not
how
to kill.
How many lashes are there?
Oh, I didn't say that. So there should be 30. 39 is the amount. Oh, 39.
That makes sense.
39. And they're only
and they're
assessed in groups of three. So you're always giving, like we said before, you have one on the chest and two on the shoulders. So the doctor, if he's going to cut off any lashes, will cut them off by threes. So it's going to be multiples of three.
So the one on the chest and the shoulder, does that count as one lash or is three?
That's three. Okay. That's three. Yes, there'll be 13 sets of that. That's how it's done. And on the other hand, if let's say the doctor comes in and he says he can handle 39. And then in the middle of the procedure, the doctor says, hold on, I don't think he can handle it, you stop. You know, you're always going to follow the doctor in these things. On the other hand, if the doctor sees he can handle more, you don't give more. Once the doctor says you give only 15, then you don't go above 15, despite the fact the guy could handle more. So we go with the doctor's word and we let the guy, you know, have it a little easier whenever necessary.
In what time, what era is this kind of ideas about lashes?
I mean, it was done as long as they had a Beis Din with smicha, it could have been done. So
my question is, there are doctors at this time? I know the Rambam was a doctor,
right.
But this is much later.
Yeah, but they're always doctors. I mean, it could be they didn't have the same understanding we have. There's always doctors around.
Last week's parsha is Yerapeh gives us the ability to act as Hashem's agent as a doctor.
Right, right. So you take the doctor's word very seriously here, because you don't want to kill the person. Your goal is just to kind of teach him a lesson, not to kill him. Yeah.
When we lived in Mississippi, when I went down there with the Air Force, so my sons, I had two boys, they went to the public schools there. Most of the kids were very nice. There was one kid who every time we'd pass Max would utter an anti-Semitic word, would say something every time. Uh-huh. And after a while, so Max got really upset about this. So we went to the, Jennifer went to the principal, I think I was working, and they're going to give him, I don't know if they call it lashes, but they were going to hit him with a ruler.
They're going to paddle him.
Thank
I
you.
Used to live in Mississippi.
So I lived in Biloxi.
Ocean Springs, actually.
Oh, yeah, right there.
My dad
right there.
Was in the Air Force.
So they were going to paddle the kid.
Yeah.
So what did Jennifer say? Don't paddle him. I'm like, don't paddle him. Paddle the kid. So they didn't paddle because Jennifer said not to paddle.
I got paddled. Once.
You got paddled.
That is detention.
My son, one of my twins.
That's funny.
Jennifer said, but you don't have to paddle. Paddle the kid.
Right. Okay.
So they still do it. They still do that kind of thing.
Interesting. Yeah. So
they hit him with a ruler.
Wasn't uncommon if you go back, 50 years ago. It wasn't uncommon.
Hit him with a paddle.
No.
I was also reading that.
Years ago. Used to. Yeah, used to.
Yeah.
Not anymore.
No, they do it now.
In yeshivas. I mean, hopefully not. But not anymore.
Oh, no.
If you go back, they did.
So 39 is the most that they could do.
Yeah, right. Right.
Is that significant for something?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. It is. Oh, we'll talk about that. We'll get to that point also. I'm just trying to get through the details first here. Another interesting point is that the Torah says v'nikla achicha le'necha, that your brother becomes disgraced before you. Mm-hmm. So the rabbis learn from that the person, if they feel disgraced, they're off the hook. So if somebody is getting lashed and they lose control of their faculties, they can't hold themselves in from going to the bathroom, lose control, then they're actually off the hook at that point. So that could
What's the sentence in Hebrew?
V'nikla achicha le'enecha, that your brother becomes disgraced before your eyes. So if they experience that disgrace, even if it's not through the lashing, you start lashing and they lose control of themselves. So then that person's off the hook. Interesting thing. So that's the basic procedure of the lash. Again, there's always more details, but that's the basic procedure for the lashes. So I want to discuss more, what's the meaning of this? I mean, again, for us, we're not used to physical punishment. In our day and age, it's not done. But certainly, if you look through the Tanakh and through the Mishnah and Gemara, there is room for it. It could be, it might be based on the generation, if people will actually take the right message from it or not. But there definitely is room for it. It's an obligation on a Beis Din to give it. And in general, that is the famous verse of, if you hold back the staff, you hit your child. So we might look at that staff as other types of consequences, but there is room for it, technically. It's not recommended nowadays. I've never heard any rabbis recommend this nowadays. Just
what was the sentence you said for that?
Chosech shivto sone beno.
Chosech.
What did it say? Spare the staff. Spoil the child. Is I think the English phrase they use.
Chosech shivto
sone beno.
Sone
beno. You hate. Yeah. If you hold back your staff, you hate your child. So first and foremost, we have to understand that you have consequences. The idea of having to incur lashes based on Avera, it shows us the severity of the action. If there is no consequence in this world, if we said everything's spiritual, there's no consequence in this world, so people aren't going to take it seriously. For us, you know, we can talk all the time about the world to come and Gehenna and spiritually, but it doesn't feel as real to us as getting hit by something. That's something which we have to understand. The consequences of our actions are real, and really indicates to us the damage that we've done in a much bigger sense through the Avera. Any question?
Actually, no, but I was just thinking, how practically was this carried out? If you saw someone eating, like, pork, were they, like, did they come and get arrested, and then they were held, and then, like...
Yeah, we didn't have a concept necessarily of... they could have been held if needed, but you have two witnesses, they go to the Beis Din, they tell them what happened.
And what if the guy says, I'm not going to the Beis Din?
So there was shoftim v'shotrim titen chavot. There was a police force. The pasuk says you have to have shoftim, judges, and shotrim, and enforcers. There was a police force that would come in and bring them in. So
there has to be warning. You can't just say, I saw him eating pork.
Right, yeah. They were warned and accepted the warning.
We warned him that if he did this, he would be subject to lashes, and he has to acknowledge it and say, I'm going to do it anyhow.
Yeah, so he says, I get it. I get it, and I'm doing it. So at that point, then the beast will have to take control.
Well, I was wondering, was this like only applied in like Eretz Yisrael? Could this have been in the diaspora?
It could have been in the diaspora as long as the judges had proper smicha.
Right.
So proper smicha was only given in Eretz Yisrael, but if they received it in Eretz Yisrael and then went outside Eretz Yisrael, then they could do it outside also.
Because there were Jews living in Italy, the Italian peninsula.
So it could have been done there as long as they had proper smicha.
Bavel also.
In Bavel for sure. Yeah, in Bavel they definitely had people in Bavel with proper smicha for a while. That's for sure. So part of the message is we have to understand that an Avera is real. It does damage to us, does damage to the world, does damage in many ways. And if there was no consequence in this world for an Avera that we could see, so then we wouldn't treat it seriously. But if you saw, some person in your community was lashed because they did, you realize how serious it is. And if, God forbid, you're the one being lashed, you really realize how serious it is. The lashes were painful, but they weren't lethal, but they were painful. Physical punishment for us is very close to home, very impactful. I'm not saying nowadays it should be done. That's a different discussion. But that's more impactful to us than many other types of consequence. So it's very close to home. So when we felt that, we realized how damaging the Avera actually was. We mentioned how the whip was made out of calf. It was calf hide, and then it was donkey hide. So why are those two animals chosen? So I actually mentioned this, I think, about a month ago, right? There's a pasuk in the book of Yeshaya. We read it on Shabbos Chazon before Tisha B'Av. It says, Yada shor konehu, an ox knows its owner, the chamur evus be'alav, and the donkey recognizes its owner's trough. Then it says, Yisrael lo yada, Israel doesn't know, amilo isbana, my nation doesn't contemplate. And what Yeshaya is telling us is that when we do averos, we're ignoring the fact that Hashem provides for us. If we felt that gratitude to Hashem, we would listen to His word. So a donkey understands where its food comes from, and an ox knows who takes care of it. But when the Jews are doing Averos, that means that we are not recognizing how much Hashem gives to us. And therefore, when you use a whip made out of those two different hides, you should recall that pasuk and realize how far away you've gone from recognizing who gives you life. And that's the idea of those two different materials. We have to feel indebted to Hashem at all times, and when we feel indebted to Hashem, we want to do His will.
The calf is from an ox?
The calf, an ox is an adult, calf. A calf can grow into an ox.
A male.
It's a baby.
Yeah, a male.
Yeah,
right,
but it's a baby ox.
A baby ox, yeah.
That's what I said.
Yeah, right. In a certain sense, and this is what many commentaries describe, when a person does an Avera, we're not just acting like an animal, we're worse than an animal. Because animals, they're doing what they're supposed to do. They're doing their instincts. When we do an Avera, we're going against our mission in life. So animals, they always follow their instincts. They're doing what God made them to do. When we do the wrong things, we're going against what God made us to do. and therefore we've sunken lower than the animals. We're very careful not to kill, though, the person receiving the lashes, because our job is to give him punishment to encourage tshuva. We don't want to kill the person. We're not trying just to inflict him with pain. We're trying to, the purpose of any punishment in the Torah is always tshuva. We're always trying to help the person out. It's for his own benefit. It's not just punitive, but it's trying to help the person improve. So therefore, we take extra care that the lashes should not become lethal. Even if I say, yeah, the guy deserves it, he's a lowlife, he's terrible, he's done this 55 times already, it doesn't matter. The point is that we're trying to teach him that you have to do better, you have to do tshuva. And I mentioned, we're talking about two mitzvahs today. It was 594, 595. 595 is that's the prohibition of lo yosif. Don't dare add an extra lash. Meaning there's a mitzvah, give lashes as you're supposed to, but we tell the agent of the Beis Din, you have a Torah prohibition not to give one extra. That's lo yosif. That's mitzvah 595 in the count of mitzvos. Because that one extra lash is saying that the goal here is to punish as the Torah tells you, but you can't just let it out on the guy. You can't just let loose because the guy is a terrible person who did averos, so it doesn't matter. The same thing, we say that the person giving the lashes should be, you know, lacking in strength, but, you know, be very, very intelligent. The point is because the goal here is not the pain per se, the goal is the message. So you get the message even if the pain is not so severe, you still get the message. You're sitting there in a very, very disgraced state, publicly being lashed by the Beis Din, even if the pain is not as terrible as it could have been. I mean, it's still painful regardless, but the goal is that you get the message, you should think about your averos. It's pointed out that the Hebrew wording here is im bin hakos harasha. If the person deserves lashes, give him lashes. But the term uses bin hakos. So bin here is like ben. Is he a child of lashes? He deserving of lashes? But the word bin is related to the word bina, understanding. And the point is that the lashes should create understanding in the person. Again, it's not just the pain, but it's the understanding. The Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, it says tova mardus achas ba'adam. The one sense of humility in a human being is greater than 100 lashes. I mean, because the lashes themselves are not the goal. It's to bring about humility in the person. So that one moment where the person feels humbled, thoughts of tshuva, that moment is worth much more than the punishment. And that's what we're heading towards. We're trying to get to that moment. And we even say, it's an astounding thing. We mentioned the verse before, v'nikla achicha le'inecha, that your brother shall be disgraced before your eyes. So the Gemara says, Kevin the Nilka, once he's lashed, Achicha is your brother. I mean, once the person is lashed, you've done your job, you've given the punishment, now you treat the person as a brother once again. You don't look at the person's not, cast off from society, not disgraced forever. That person's not your brother. And we assume that up in Shemayim, that in heaven, Hashem has forgiven all their sins through this lashing. I mean, we assume this is the atonement, and now he's a brother. He's no longer an estranged criminal, but he's a brother now because he went through this procedure. It's an amazing thing. The Oznayim Latorah of Zalman Sarutskin, he points out that really it's a powerful gift from Hashem, we'll call it, to give lashes. And then let's just depict the case for a second. Let's say a person is warned and they eat on Yom Kippur, God forbid, a terrible, terrible avera. Eating on Yom Kippur incurs not just lashes, but incurs kares. Karis is a spiritual punishment that cuts you off from God in a way which we can't even imagine how severe it could be. There are earthly results of karis. Well, it's considered one of the worst punishments in the Torah. But that person also could be liable to lashes. So if the person gets lashes, the Gemara tells us that the karis is forgiven. So there's two options here. You can go through a little bit of pain in this world. A ceremony might take a few minutes. You might have to heal for a little while afterwards. A little pain. Or you can be cut off from God in the eternal world. That sounds pretty scary, pretty severe thing. So how do the two things cancel one another out? If I get the lashes now in this world, then the kares is waived, it's forgiven. If I don't, then the kares remains. So it's an amazing thing that Hashem says that kares can be removed just through the lashes. It's actually, it's kind of a chesed from Hashem to us that we can go through a little pain in this world to give us so much more in the coming world. He says a similar example. We know that theft is considered a terrible sin. To steal, everyone sees that as a terrible avera. If you return the object you stole, then you have erased that avera. So as somebody steals a, someone steals something small, I steal an apple. It's worth, 40 cents. So I've just done a terrible avera called gzela or gneva, and that's going to incur punishments in the world to come. I can walk back over to you and say, I'm sorry, I stole your apple, take it back, and it's all just erased from the record. It's an amazing thing. And because Hashem gave us opportunities in this world, we have time to repair our actions. In the world to come, we don't have that opportunity. There's a very famous phrase in Pirkei Avos, Yafesh achas b'tshuva u'maisim tovim. One moment of tshuva and good deeds in this world is greater than the entire life of the world to come. So why is that? Because in this world, I can actually change and improve my actions through small deeds. In the world to come, I'm stuck. I am who I am. And if I don't return that apple, I'm going to go up after 120 years, and I'm going to be accused of being a thief. And if I return that apple, then that's waived off the record, and I'm not a thief anymore. But in this world, we have opportunities to grow through smaller punishments or smaller actions, which have tremendous results in the world to come. So it should be very encouraging for us. So somebody who got lashes, as painful and embarrassing it was actually it was good for them, because now any more severe punishment in the spiritual realm was erased. It's an amazing thing. Now, why 39? We said before, why is 39 significant? So it's very interesting where it comes from, because the Torah actually says the word 40. The actual pasuk says, must have turned the page somewhere. 1 second. Here it is. Okay. The actual Torah, says itself, "Arba'im yakenu lo yosif." You should strike him 40 times and don't add. But yet we get to 39. So the Gemara actually tells us that's 39 because the previous verse says, "Kedei rishaso ben mispar." You should lash them with a number. 40 hits and don't add. So the word "with a number" is an extra word in the Torah. So Gemara says it means the number prior to 40. So why does it say the word "you should lash them with a number"? 40 hit them. It means the number before 40. So interesting how the Gemara takes the word 40 and tells you it actually means 39. As an aside, the Gemara tells us that people are so foolish. They stand before the Sefer Torah and not before a Talmud Chacham. I mean, the Torah says 40. And the rabbi could tell you no means 39. We go with what he says. So how can you stand for the Torah itself and not stand for the rabbi who seems to be able to interpret the Torah beyond the simple meaning? It's an interesting point in its own discussion how that works exactly. But it's part of the oral tradition. But we see the rabbis came in and said, "Don't. It doesn't mean 40, it means 39. So why 39? So there's many explanations to this, some more basic and some more complex. So I'm going to share a few of them. So the Maral, Gur Arye, Maral says the following. He says that technically we deserve 40 lashes. The number of 40 comes from the concept that a baby is first formed in 40 days. Halachically, we look at the first 40 days of conception as the formation of the child. Even in the world, let's say, of abortions or the like, it's much more. There's a lot more room for leniency before 40 days after conception than after. Because for first 40 days the baby is forming. After 40 days, that's considered a real viable fetus. So 40 days are the creation of a human being. So we should reserve 40 lashes to correspond to the 40 days in which we were formed. That's the Maral says. However, we give 39 because we know that Hashem is lo ya'ir kol chamaso. Hashem does not spill out all of his anger. Hashem holds back. So the Beis Din also will therefore hold back as well. Because Hashem says, you deserve 40, but I'm not going to spill out my entire anger on you. I'm going to hold back by one, you'll get 39. That's what the Maral says. The others say that the number 39 is significant because 39 is the gematria of the word tal. Tal is due. And there's this description, it's a metaphor, but there's a description that the Tchias HaMesim, the revival of the dead, happens through a dew, and dew revives the dead. Dew is considered a kind of a liquid of life. And therefore, since the person now has had lashes, and they've been cleansed of their sins, and they're now called our brother, so this is like a Tal Shel Tchia. It's a dew which gives them life in the world to come. It's a dew which gives them life once again. So the 39 lashes they change from being pain to being dew, which is help grow and help them become greater. The another interpretation here, by 39, is that we leave off one at the end, because the person should realize that my punishment's incomplete and be nervous. If I think I've been fully punished, everything's fine, I can go back to my regular life, then maybe I'll fall back into my old ways. But if I say, you know what, God left off a little bit here just to make me anxious and scared, then maybe I'll be a little more careful with my actions in the future. So every person's aware that there should be 40, and we give 39 so that you remain nervous and don't sin again. So those are a few explanations here of why 39. But I want to go into a little bit deeper explanation.
No, nobody suggests that you cut off one to make sure you don't accidentally go over?
No one suggests that. I didn't see that. Because really, because giving 40 is called going over. Halachically, if you give the 40, if you've gone over. So that doesn't
and
help in terms of the prohibition.
Very smart.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Very, very smart. So he knows what he's doing. So I want to share with you two deeper explanations which kind of correlate with one another, but not exactly, but they're close to one another. These are different Hasidic interpretations which have a lot of depth to them. The number 39 to us, again, 39 should have been 40, and let's cut back to 39. So let's take first, this is the explanation of Be'er Moshe, as the Sefer explains it this way. Be'er Moshe goes back on the point mentioned before. The fetus is formed in 40 days. He says the first 39 days is the body being formed, and the 40th day is the neshama being inserted into the body. I actually once read a study. It was a book that was trying to show how halacha and science, you know, do meet up, even when we don't realize it. These books often make me a little bit weary because, you know, sometimes these things aren't always so accurate. But this book did seem to show that after 40 days, scientists detect brain activity in a fetus they don't detect beforehand. So there is some sort of new life that comes in on day 40. But the way the Be'er Moshe describes it is that 39 days is the formation of the body, and the 40th day is when the soul is inserted into the body. So when one does an Avera, the Avera comes from the body. The soul is perfect, the soul is pure, the soul is untainted by any sort of human desire. The body is the one that causes the problems in terms of sin. The body says, I want to do this, I want to do that, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I'm angry, I'm impatient. That's the body talking, not the soul. So he says that when you're giving your 39 lashes, it's because those 39 lashes are cleansing those 39 days when the body was formed. Those 39 days are causing the sin. Every single lash is kind of, you know, taking one of those days of the formation of the body and purifying it. But you don't need the 40th one, because the 40th one corresponds to the soul, which wasn't really involved in the sin. The soul didn't do anything wrong. So we give 39, not 40. To take it a little bit further from a different perspective, this is a commentary of Rav Moshe Wolfson. He says that Kabbalistically, we understand that there are four letters of God's name, and every letter of God's name contains within it the 10 different spheros. So you end up with 40 spiritual levels that come out of God's name. Kabbalistic thoughts. But there's this idea of 40 levels of spirituality. And there's every letter of God's name, you have four letters, Yud Kei Vav Kei. Each one has 10 levels, times 4 is 40. So when one does an Avera, when one sins, you are, in a sense, attacking, corrupting, and dirtying these levels of spirituality. I'm supposed to have 40 levels of spirituality, but every time I sin, I'm somehow damaging those spiritual levels to myself. However, there's a part of the person which can never be damaged. The 40th level, he says, which corresponds, I guess, to the deepest part of the soul, can't be touched by sin. The part of the neshama, which sin doesn't touch, the purest part of the person. And that can't be defiled in any way by our actions. So on the outside, you look at someone who's a terrible person, and you say, he's defiled all 40 levels of spirit. There's nothing left in this guy. Spiritual, it's all gone. It's all physical, it's all animalistic, it's all a loss of control. But yet, deep down, every single Jew, there's that, we call it the pintel yid, there's that point which is in there, which can't be destroyed, can't be touched, can't be defiled. So even though externally you think, oh, he deserves 40 lashes because he's defiled 40 levels of spirituality, we say, no, it's only 39, because there's one point in the person that was never defiled. There's a point in the person which the evil cannot touch. So you give 39 and not 40. It corresponds also to 39 different forbidden melachos of Shabbos.
So they thought immediately.
39 melachos, yeah. Right. So why are there 39? So technically it's the same concept. That when Adam and Chava sinned, that brought into the world the need to work. 39 forbidden labors are what came into the world after they sinned. This is a result of the curse of Hashem towards Adam and Chava. They were given 39 malachos because since Adam's sin damaged 39 levels of spirituality, so then we were forced to do 39 malachos in our daily routine. It used to be they got fed by, you know, fed by Hashem directly, by angels, and then afterwards they had to work by the sweat of their brow. And that led to the 39 malachos. But there weren't 40, because that 40th level of spirituality was never touched by sin. And therefore, there's only 39 labors that we do during the week, and not 40. So these are all very, very deep concepts, but ultimately it teaches us that these 39 lashes are there to cleanse us of all the damage that we did. And the damage only goes to level 39, not level 40. So that's the deeper understanding of 39. Just to finish the thought, this prohibition of Luyu Sif, not to add on an extra lash. So that doesn't just apply to the case of lashes. The Gemara teaches us that hitting any Jew anytime, you're violating this prohibition. Because the idea is that the only time you're ever allowed to strike another Jew is if you're an agent of a Beis Din giving lashes. And even that agent of the Beis Din can't add on an extra lash. So certainly any of us in daily life can't go ahead and punch another Jew or strike another Jew, that's for sure. If even the Beis Din can't do it, for sure we can't do it. But he mentions it in there. Yeah, he mentions it in there.
It says here right. The prohibition to give extra lashes, which includes a prohibition to strike any Jew.
Right, correct. Right. We call it Kavah Chomer. It's, you know, so certainly it's true. If the agent of Beis Din can't do it, when the guy in front of him deserves lashes and is a criminal, then certainly you can't go to a Jew in the street and punch him in the face. So that's included in this prohibition. And not only this, it's actually, the Gemara says, not only is it forbidden to actually hit or strike another Jew, but just to, when you raise your hand to strike somebody, even if you hold back, you're called a Rasha. Called a wicked person. It's quoted from the verse you have in Parsha Shmos. Vayomer the Rasha, Moshe said to the wicked man, Lama Sakarech, why are you hitting your friend? The fact that you even think of hitting somebody also already puts you into the category of being wicked, the Gemara says. When you hit a fellow Jew, so that actually could incur a monetary fine or could incur lashes, depending on the situation. But that's included in this prohibition. So the prohibition is said about the agent of the Beis Din giving lashes, that he can't give even one extra, or he's violated the Torah. But beyond that, it applies to every single Jew that, you know, we try to resolve things in a peaceful manner. And if you try to punch somebody, you violated the prohibition of Lo Yosef. It's actually funny, because if I asked any of you, are you allowed to hit another person? Everyone would say no. I ask you, where in the Torah does it say that? You probably say, I don't know. And the answer is, it says it right here. You can't give an extra lash, and that's why you can't punch anybody or hit anybody or lash anybody out of context. That's for sure a problem. So that's the idea of lashes. So the lessons for us, again, we don't do this nowadays for many reasons. I mean, we don't have the authority, we don't have a Beis Din, etc. The whole idea of punishing somebody physically in our world nowadays is not typically done. And even in Jewish educational theory, it's looked down upon nowadays. We don't think it's going to be effective anymore. It really depends on society. You go back 100 years ago, it may have been more effective. But nowadays, if someone were to hit a kid, the kid will probably just hit back and rebel. I mean, it's not going to get you anywhere. Sue. Right. So that concept has to be applied in context in the right time and place. However, the idea of a consequence is very important for us to understand, and to know actions have consequences. And when one violates the Torah, there is an impact in ways beyond that which we can imagine. We have to at least be able to recognize that. So we may not receive lashes, but we have to know that the severity of our actions is very, very significant. And anything that we do which violates the Torah does have ramifications in many, many broad ways, and we have to be careful with that. I think that's the bigger lesson of these malchus.
Chazak v'ruch.